Okay, Parshas Vayetze is on page 144. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva, and Yaakov went out from Be'er Sheva, Vayela Charana, and he went to Haran. This is Yaakov has left his father's home to go to Aram to find himself a wife from his mother Rivka's family. Now the second Rashi, Vayetze, Rashi asks a question. The pasuk says Yaakov left Be'er Sheva and he went to Haran. So Rashi says the only thing the Torah really has to write is Yaakov went to Haran. Doesn't it have to tell us that he left Be'er Sheva? We know he left Be'er Sheva. That's where they were living. The Sifas HaChamim points out that if you look back at the end of last week's parsha, on page 142, so over there it says, this is Pasuk Zion, like 4 or 5 lines from the bottom, Vayishma Yaakov el Avi Velimai, Yaakov listened to his father and his mother, Vayelech Paden Aram, and he went to Paden Aram. Doesn't say he left and he went. He went. So here also can tell us, and he went to Haran. Why does it have to say that Yaakov left? Therefore, Rashi cites a Medrash, famous Medrash, the point of the Torah mentioning Yaakov's leaving is to stress that there was something unique, something special about his leaving. And that is that when a tzaddik leaves a place, it leaves its mark. Because when a tzaddik is in the city, hu hoda, he is its praise, hu ziva, he is its shine, hu hadara, he is its beauty. Yatsa Misham, when he leaves the place, Panahida, Panaziva, Panahadara. All these qualities leave. The Chayim Ataitseim and Hamakim Ha'amr Benami V'Rus. And the same thing is found in the book of Rus, when Nami and Rus leave. Again, there too the Torah says that she left. And there too the Sefer Rus mentions that she left, also to bring out this point that when Nami left, Nami was a tzaddikah, so when she left, the ziv, the shine, and the glory of the place left with her. What does it mean that when the tzaddik is in the city, he is its ziv, he is its shine, he is its hadara, he is its beauty, he is its glory? The Sifas HaChachamim says that means that when the tzaddik is in the city, the people act differently. The people act differently in the presence of the tzaddik. The tzaddik rebukes, the tzaddik guides, the tzaddik teaches, and therefore he is its He adds a very special quality to the city, and when he leaves, it's gone. I always like mentioning, there's a famous story, I mentioned this before. The Chafetz Chaim wanted to emigrate to Eretz Yisrael. And when that happened, Rav Chaim Isaac Grudzinski of Vilna went to speak to him that he shouldn't leave because the Jews in Europe still need him. So the Chafetz Chaim said, I'm very old. I can't really do anything anymore. What's the difference? Rabbi Chaim Meiser answered, when the grandfather sits at the table, everybody sits up straight. When the grandfather is at the table, everybody sits up straight. The presence of, there's something about the presence of a tzaddik, the presence of a special person. The presence of a special person demands a certain behavior. And therefore, when the tzaddik leaves the place, so, when the tzaddik leaves, all the glory goes with the tzaddik. Now, there is an obvious question on this Rashi. And that is, well, you know, when Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, so we're saying that tzaddik leaves, the shine, the glory of the city leaves. So ask a question. The tzaddik leaves, the glory is gone. Was that true about Be'er Sheva?
No, but
Yitzhak and Rivka was still there. Yitzhak and Rivka was still there. So what does it mean when Yaakov left, the glory is gone? What happened to Yitzchak and Rivka? What are they? Chop liver?
They're getting old. And Yitzchak never had a lot of influence anyway. He only had one student, which is Yaakov.
That's not necessarily true.
I thought that was
his prime student. Doesn't mean that he didn't have other students.
Okay.
Listen, and how many students did Yaakov have?
Twelve. Yeah.
Okay, I'm saying they both weren't like Aruvi necessarily. And you look in the Rambam seems to say, well, Yitzchak maybe not. Yaakov had a bigger following than Yitzchak. Okay, so you're saying that the point is because Yitzchak didn't really have an influence on the city.
And he was getting old.
Okay. So you're saying he was just not relevant.
It was not relevant, but a lot got lost at Yitzchak being there.
I understand, but the point is, the Rashi says the ziv is gone, the shine is gone, the glory is gone. So you want to say because Yitzchak maybe at this point of time wasn't wasn't doing much, and therefore Yaakov was the whole thing. All right, interesting. The Sifrei Chacham decides to measure some answers. Seemingly very simple answer. It's true that Yitzchak was still there. Rivka was still there. But you know, two tzaddikim is better than one. Right? There's a difference between having two or three tzaddikim, between having one tzaddik or two tzaddikim or three tzaddikim in a city, or going down, you know, having three going back down to two, or having two going back down to one. So therefore, the Rashi brings down the Medrash that still says that the ziv, the shine, left because of the fact that you know, clearly, as the Medrash says, two tzaddikim are definitely better than one. Now, there is a comment, I want to read to you the Medrash itself, the Medrash that Rashi seems to be citing, even though Rashi says that the question of the pasuk by which we say when the tzaddik leaves, the glory leaves, is because why does he even have to say that Yaakov left? The Medrash poses the question a little bit different. The Medrash poses the question Vayetzak Yaver Shava, Vayetze. Vechiva Yotza Misham Elohu. The Pasuk says Vayetze Yaakov. Yaakov went out in singular form. Is it only that Yaakov left? Ve'kama chamorim ve'kama gamorim yatsu. Vat amar vayetze Yaakov. The Medrash assumes that Yaakov had an entourage. Yaakov didn't leave alone. He didn't just leave alone. He had people with him. So why doesn't he say vayetze Yaakov? What happened to all the other people that were with him? Rabbi Zayi b'shem Yehuda bar Simon Omar, b'zman shatzadik ba'ir, huziva hu hadara. When the tzaddik, the answer is that why does it say Vayetze? Why doesn't it mention Yaakov leaving and not the others? Because we're trying to focus specifically on Yaakov. And that is to bring out the point when the tzaddik leaves, the tzaddik in the city is its shine, he is its beauty. Yatsumi sham panaziva panahadara. When he leaves, gone is the shine, gone is the glory. The commentary of Eitz Yosef, he explains that the ziv, the shine that's been referring to when the tzaddik in the city, there's the ziv, there's the shine of the city, he's the shine of the city, that represents Torah study. Ziv, the shine, refers to Torah study. Hadara, the glory, the beauty, refers to the honor that he shows other people, the honor that he treats other people with, and how people basically feel honored with the presence of the tzaddik. Okay. The Dachav Asay, we find it similar in the book of Ruth. And she left the place that she was there, referring to Naomi. Vateitze, singular form, and she went out. Vechiva yatsu min amokim elahi, was she the only one who left? Again, you're assuming she only went out alone? Rebizir b'shem Rebizir b'simim, Rebichad b'shem b'shmo b'ar Yitzchak, Amak sh'atzadik b'ir, Huziva hu hadara, Yatsumisham, Panaziva, Panahadara. There again, the same idea. The fact that they're only focusing on Naomi leaving is to point out how Naomi's leaving is unique. It leaves its mark. When the righteous person is there, he has the glory of the city. When he leaves, the glory leaves with him. Now the Medrash says, Nicha, the Taman. We can understand this over there by Ruth. The way Ha'is Hashem, Ha'is HaTzadek is Spavad. Can assume the only righteous person in Moab at that point of time was Naomi, and when she left, there was no one left. But here, Yitzchak and Rivka still were there. Rabbi Zayi, Rabbi Simon, Omar, Leidema Zechusei Shal Tzadik Echad, LeZechusei Shal Shnei Tzadikim. You cannot compare the merit of one tzaddik to the merit of two tzaddikim. And therefore, that's why we're still focusing on Yaakov leaving, because of the fact that two tzaddikim are better than one, the schus of two tzaddikim is greater than the schus of one, and therefore Yaakov's leaving left its mark. In Echanani, it's not like the place was empty of schus, it was empty of merit of the righteous. But clearly, they didn't have as much as they had before. The commentary about Nafi Yosef on the Medrash makes the following comment. It's a fascinating comment. Basically, when the question is asked, when the Medrash asks the question, I can understand this concept by Ruth, by Nami, because when Nami left, there was no one there. No one was left. But Yitzchak and Rivka were still there, so why are we making a fuss about Yaakov? So the Gemara answers, two are better than one. So the Anav Yosef seems to be bothered that that's a pretty pashut teretz. It's pretty simple. It's really not, you know, to understand that two tzaddikim are better than one isn't a major chiddush. And therefore he's bothered by, you know, the question and the answer. It seems to be too simple. Therefore he says like this, that even when the Medrash asked the question, the Medrash understood two tzaddikim are a greater merit than one. But the question was that by Naomi we're saying when Naomi left, gone was the glory, gone was the shine, which implies that the whole thing was gone. But when you have one tzaddik and you have two tzaddikim, so the assumption is that by one tzaddik you have X amount of tzchus, and when you have two tzaddikim, how much do you then have? Double. You have double. Around double. You could assume it's around double. So therefore, if so, when the second tzaddik leaves, right, then really, how much of the glory of the city has left? Half of it. And therefore, it's difficult to say that the same way by Nami, when Nami left, the glory was gone, to compare that to when Yaakov leaves, the glory is gone. What do you mean? Half the glory is still there when Yaakov leaves. When Nami leaves, she was the only one there, so she's gone. So when she leaves, all the glory is gone. But how do you make a comment all that the glory is gone by Yaakov when basically half the glory is gone? So the question is really on the concept. And this concept, when the tzaddik leaves, we said by Nami, when the tzaddik leaves, the glory is gone, and we see that by Nami, and we say the same thing by Yaakov. Well, when Nami leaves, you can understand that we can say, gone is the glory. She was the only one. But Yitzchak, at the end of the day, the Midrash is asking, what do you mean by Yaakov, when Yaakov leaves, the glory is gone? Half the glory is gone. Because when you have two tzaddikim, you have double the amount of one tzaddik. That's how you should basically frame it. And if that's how you frame it, how can you say, gone is the glory? Half the glory is gone. Not all of it, which is clearly what happened by Ruth and Nami. So it's the Medrash is kind of asking on itself, in the sense that it says by Yaakov, gone is the glory. You can't say gone is the glory. Some of the glory is gone. But the Medrash was saying all the glory is gone. So what's the answer? What's the answer to the Medrash when it says that you can't compare the merit of one tzaddik can't be compared to the merit of two tzaddikim? The answer is that don't look at two tzaddikim just double one. You know, we have one tzaddik, like the Rav Yosef says, when you have one tzaddik, you have 10 measures of glory, okay? Two tzaddikim is 20 measures of glory, because it's double, okay? Just double the first thing. No. When you have two tzaddikim together, it's compounded. It's a lot more than just one. The fact that two tzaddikim are together, when their merits combine, when they're together, when they work together, when they're living together, the advantage, the growth, the influence of two tzaddikim is not just double one. It compounds to a lot more. It compounds to hundreds more. And therefore, when one tzaddik leaves, and you're losing two tzaddikim, yeah, the Medrash can say, gone is the glory. Because compared to the amount of glory that you have when you have two tzaddikim, and then only one, it's that big a difference that you could actually say, gone is the glory that was there before. Because it's been decreased to much less than what it was before. That's just a fascinating way of looking at it. You know, don't just look at two tzaddikim as, you know, assuming, framing it as, I mean, typically, you know, no one can measure what kind of tzaddik each person is. But okay, you're looking at two tzaddikim, you're going to assume it's double. No, it's not double. It's compounded. It's compounded to a lot more when the two tzaddikim are together and working together and influencing together. It's a lot more. And therefore, when the one tzaddik is gone, you've lost so much. that compared to what you had before, you could actually say the glory is gone.
So it's like the difference between learning Torah alone or learning Torah in a chavrusa. You don't just double.
You're such a doubly learning, get to much more.
Dynamics,
okay.
Much bigger learning.
Okay, that's a good comparison.
Yeah.
That's a good analogy. Okay. Now there's another medrash on when Yaakov left, when it says that Yaakov left Beersheba, and the medrash begins with the pasuk in Tehillim, Shir la'amalis, Esrei inai le'ha'horim. I lift up my eyes to the mountains, Esrei inai le'ha'horim, may I in Yavoi Ezri, from where does my aid come from? Ezri ma'ashem, Isa shavayim vo'aretz, my aid comes from Hashem, creator of heaven and earth. So the Medrash actually takes the word El Heharim, which we, with the punctuation of Heharim means the mountains, and changes it to the words Horim. Horim means parents. Esra Einai El Hahorim, Yaakov says. I'm going to look to my parents, L'malachmi L'avdeni, to teach me, to guide me. May I in Yavai Ezri, and therefore from where does my assistance come? Eliezer b'shar sha'avach lovi es Rivka. Let's look back, Yaakov says. When Eliezer went to find a wife for Rivka, Maksiv Bey, what does it say regarding him? Vayikach ha'eved asar gemalim. He came with 10 camel loads of the best of what his master had. Ani lo nezim echad leitzamet echad. I don't even have a nose ring or a bracelet to give. So Esra'enai laharim, I look back to my parents, right? Me'ayi yavai Ezri. What am I going to do? I look back at my parents. Avram sent 10 camel loads of jewelry, of wealth, of good things. I don't have anything. Why do you have anything? So Reb Chanina Amar Godet Shalchai. Yitzchak left, sent them intentionally empty-handed because they didn't want Esav going after him. That's the second version. I'm sharing you now a new version of the story that you probably never heard. The first version is, according to the Medrash, Yitzchak sent him without anything, so that he should not be robbed by Esav. Yibishua ben Levi Amar, Shilachimai. No. Yitzchak sent him with plenty of stuff. Elisha Amar, Esav, and not Lemimenu. The word in here is Esav took it from him. We always use that to Lifaz. Maybe it means the same thing here. But at the end of the day, Yaakov says, I'm left with nothing. And I look back at what my ancestors did, I look back what happened to Eliezer, and what am I going to do? Chazar, which means he retracted what he said. Varmani said, Mani Mervit Savri, Minbrayai Chas V'Shalom? What am I giving up on my creator Chas V'Shalom? Leisana Mervit Savri Minbrayai. I'm not going to lose my trust in my creator. Ela Ezri Mashem. But rather, my aid will come from God. So based on what the Medrash says, Yaakov is having a struggle. He comes to Aram Narayim. He knows he has to find a wife. First he says, I'm stuck. What am I going to use? I don't have anything to give. You have to give something. You have to offer something. You have to give something. I don't have anything. And then he catches himself. He takes back what he says. And he says, what am I giving up my hope, my trust in the Rabbeinu Shalom? Ezri Mashem. So the commentaries struggle. What was Yaakov going through here? Was Yaakov just having this major lapse and then catching himself? So the Beis Halevi learns very interestingly. I think it's also a very, 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 almost a very practical way of looking at Yaakov's struggle. Yaakov isn't necessarily in his first comment losing his trust in the Rabbeinu Shalom. He's not. But rather, Yaakov is going through the following thought process that many of us go through, I'm sure. You know, you need money for something, and you don't got it. So what do you say? You know, the Rabbeinu Shalom, I put my trust and I dive into the Rabbeinu Shalom that he'll find me a way of getting the money. So I need money, and the Rabbeinu Shalom will get me the money. How? I'll win the lottery. I'll find an extra job. A relative will come forth and help me out. You make these calculations of how it will happen. You have trust in the Rabbeinu Shalom that he's the one that's going to make it happen. But you make these calculations in your mind at the end of the day, how is it going to happen? How am I going to get that money? There has to be a means for me to get the money. I can have full trust in the Rebbeinu Shalom that he's the source of those means, but I'm saying to myself, okay, what will be the means by which the Rebbeinu Shalom will give me what I need? That's what Yaakov is saying himself. Yaakov is saying, I don't have my Eliezer came with loads of stuff. I have nothing. How am I going to find a wife? Is he questioning? Is he doubting? He's not doubting, but he's saying in his mind, okay, where is it going to come from? Where is that going to come from? Where is the money going to come from? And the Yaakov catches himself and he says, wait a minute. Why am I focusing on what's going to happen? How is it going to happen? How am I going to get the money for this to happen? Why am I calculating that? Ezri Mashem. Everything, my help comes from Hashem, and he can make it happen even without the money. Which at the end of the day is what happened. That's what happened. So Yaakov is going through this thought process of kind of feeling dependent on certain means, which again, he has full trust that Rabbeinu Shalom will give him those means. But he feels this dependence on these means. And then he catches himself and he realizes that the proper level of betachon is not to have to sit there and calculate what will be the means. Because if I have my full trust in the Rebbeinu Shalom, I don't have to be concerned about the means. He will take care of everything, whatever way it may be, even without these means. So it's a very interesting, it's a very common thing that I'm sure that we all go through in certain ways. When we're lacking something and we assume that things have to come together in a certain way. And we say to ourselves, oh, the Rebbeinu Shalom will do this, the Rebbeinu Shalom will do that. But again, it's because, we're seeing it all in light of a dependence on those means. But the Rebbeinu Shalom is the source of those means. The higher level is forget the means. Don't think about the means. Because the means don't mean anything. It's all the Rebbeinu Shalom. And whatever you need will come from him even without those means that you expect that you need. That's the way the Beis HaLevi learns. There's a similar explanation from a sefer that I have been quoting recently a lot from, or using a lot from, Sefer called Likutim Sefer Shem Shmuel, selections from the Sefer Shem Shmuel. And he gives a similar explanation, but I find it very interesting the way how he phrases, what's going through Yaakov's mind, what's the back and forth in Yaakov's mind. And he says like this. The way he says it is, that there is a, he calls it almost a simple level of trust in Hashem, in which you know that the Rebbeinu Shalom provides everything that we need. And a person, then the more trust a person has in Hashem, the less he'll get involved in all the calculations of what I have to do this, and this is what I have to do for this, what I have to do for that. Again, a person makes calculations of what are the means, what are the things that he needs to do to be able to have his livelihood. He understands it comes from the Rebbeinu Shalom, and the greater his trust in the Rebbeinu Shalom, the less he'll be involved in these calculations of what needs to be. There's a higher level of betachon, which the way I understand from this, is really that a person has an understanding that really any kind of success in this world, with all the things that we think work towards bringing our success, he says, if a person would look at it, would see things truthfully, he would realize is that his chances, even within the natural order of things, his chances of succeeding are so slight. We have so little control over everything that happens in this world that even to say under natural, normal means that I can succeed in what I need is so, the chances are so slight. The chances are so slight that I should really be able to succeed because I have no control over everything, over anything. Things can happen so quickly, things can change so quickly, that even what seems to be the normal natural order of things is really no guarantee at all. Which means that even within our natural existence, if we would have that clarity of perception, we would realize that everything in our lives is supernatural. Everything is supernatural. There is nothing that can even happen with the Rebbeinu Shalom. Not only just that, the Rebbeinu Shalom gives me the means by which I will succeed. Because you know what? Those means, those natural means, really shouldn't work either. The chances that they work are so small that even the natural order of things, if a person had a clear perception, would realize that there is no way to survive other than Hashem's assistance, Hashem's providence. Nothing should work. And it's a slight difference. You know, it's not a vast difference in the sense that in one case, of course, I have no question the source of everything is the Ribbono Shel Olam, and everything I have comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. But again, I'm still focusing on those means, on those things that are needed for things to happen. I just said the Ribbono Shel Olam provides them. The higher level is those means don't mean anything. And if I read, and it's not just, it sounds for him, it's not just a faith thing, it's not just an emuna thing. It's not that things don't happen with the Ribbono Shel Olam because we have our belief that everything only happens from the Ribbono Shel Olam. If a person would have that clarity of thought, he would see that even the natural means of how, natural order of things that the chances of succeeding through the natural order should be considered so slight because we have no control over anything, that it's all supernatural. It's all only Hashem's providing for us. The person who still looks at the means that he needs to succeed can sometimes get into a state where his emunah, his faith, weakens, and he starts thinking that he's the one that provides the means. But the person that has that clarity of thought, that sees that even the natural order of things shouldn't work, and everything is supernatural, if you already come to that realization, it's going to be, your chances of slipping up are going to be much less because you have nothing to fall back on. You realize there's nothing to fall back on. And therefore, that person has a stronger sense of always putting his trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam and not slipping back. Therefore, says the Shem Yishmuel, Yaakov Avinu is starting off and he understands he hasn't necessarily lost his, but he hasn't lost his betachon. He hasn't lost his faith and trust in Hashem. But rather, again, he is working on a simpler level of betachon, as sublime as it is, as high as it is, but he's working on a level of betachon that the Ribbono Shel Olam will give me what I need. But I have those needs. And now that I don't have those needs, Me'ayin Yavei Ezri. You know, where is it going to come from? Is he questioning? He may not be questioning. He may not be fallen. He may not, he hasn't lost his trust. But again, in his mind, he's wondering, where are the means? What means will there, I would say probably similar to the Beis HaLevi. What means will, where will Hashem provide me the means? How will Hashem provide me the means for what I need? Then Yaakov Avinu realizes, Ezri Im Hashem. Wait a minute. All these means that I'm thinking about, the money that Eliezer had, nothing in the natural order of things really works, should really work on its own. Even within the natural order of things, the chances of it working are so slim. There is nothing that works without the Ribbono Shel Olam's provisions, without the Ribbono Shel Olam giving us the sustenance. There's nothing. It doesn't happen. Even in the natural order, shouldn't be happening unless the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us his providence and making it happen. And therefore, Ezri Im Hashem, I have no questions, I have no doubts, I have nothing to question. Because if I realize, as he writes here, and I read you the way he says it, he went from realizing that God provides everything to the more profound level of appreciating that without God's supernatural influence, man is nothing. That was the change. Is it Hashem providing me with everything? Well, if I don't have those provisions, I'm stuck until he provides. Or, wait a minute, even those provisions can't work. He has that clarity and realizes that even in the natural order of things, they really shouldn't work. There's no guarantee at all that it should work. But rather, everything, there is nothing without Hashem's, as he calls it, supernatural influence. And therefore, Ezri Im Hashem, there's no concern, there's no question. I don't have any money, doesn't matter. The money in itself never does anything anyway. The money can't do anything. It's nothing without the influence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. With this, he actually cites a interesting maral that I think we mentioned before. There's a famous Gemara in Ksubis where the sage Rechon ben Zakkai was walking with his students, I think it says outside of Yerushalayim, and he saw a young woman picking through the dung of donkeys to try to find barley corns to eat. and he realizes that this woman doing it was the daughter of Nachdiman Ben Gurion. Nachdiman Ben Gurion was a fabulously wealthy man. And this woman says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, do you remember when I got married, what my ksuba was like? He says, I remember what your father, for the riches your father promised in the ksuba. I remember your father-in-law's riches. And look what it is, and look at the situation now. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made the famous for the following comment. Ashreichem Yisrael, fortunate are you Jewish people, that when you're on top of everything. And when you're down, you are down to the point of being subservient to the lowest nation, not only to the lowest nation, to the lowest animals of the lowest nation. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees this tragic story, sees a tragedy in front of his eyes, and what's his reaction? Fortunate you Jewish people. Wow, isn't that great? Says the Maharal, and the way the Shem Yishmuel says it is that our, as he says, the higher form of emunah betachon, the higher form of faith and trust, is to come to that point of realizing that everything is supernatural. Nothing can have any kind of success or existence without the Ribbono Shel Olam, without the Ribbono Shel Olam sustaining it. There's just nothing. That is, in essence, the nature of the Jewish people. The nature of the Jewish people is not like other nations. They have their ups, they have their downs, based on what appear, they have their ups, they have their downs. The Jewish people's existence is clearly, it clearly works with this concept. There is no existence, there is nothing without the Ribbono Shel Olam, without the Ribbono Shel Olam's supernatural influence. And if he decides to take it away, what happens? Everything falls apart. Because that is the essence of the Jewish people. The essence of the Jewish people's existence is that higher form of betachon that individuals should be striving to get to, where they realize there is nothing but Hashem's influence. That's the essence and the nature of the Jewish people. They, as a nation, live by that. They live with those parameters. They live by this, they live it clearly. They live by this, by these clear parameters that there is no existence without Hashem's influence. And that is manifested very clearly. When they're listening to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they're on top. When they're not listening to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and now the Ribbono Shel Olam takes away his influence from them, everything completely falls apart. Because that is their nature. There is no existence, there is nothing without the Ribbono Shel Olam's influence.
But we have to do our own too.
100%. He's not saying that. You have to do that. But the higher form of emunah betachon is to realize that again, my understanding is not just from the aspect of your faith that what you're doing isn't really making a difference. It's an understanding that even within nature, what you're doing really doesn't help. And the only way that things work is because of Hashem's influence, Hashem making it work. Because on its own, even in a natural order, it shouldn't work. Not just because nothing exists, nothing happens without the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's the first step. That Hashem provides me with everything. But that means I'm getting those provisions. The higher level is to realize the provisions the provisions themselves really shouldn't work. Even within a natural order, they shouldn't work because there's just no guarantees. Nothing's within our control. Which means then you understand that even those natural things completely only exist by Hashem's influence. But of course, we still have to do what we have to do.
How do we know we're doing enough?
We don't. We keep trying.
So I'm reading something in the Chazon Ish. We talked about trust in a little book. And he talks about the levels of trust. You can be a businessman who's successful, and you go, Baruch Hashem, he's given me everything. My business is so successful. And then somebody comes and opens a competing business not far away. He says, no, one type of person, he really isn't that much trust, and he starts saying, what am I going to do now? He's going to compete with me. And then he starts thinking about ways he can interfere with the other guy's business, whereas another guy who really has faith in Hashem knows that Hashem's going to make him successful if Hashem wants to, he actually goes and helps this guy because he knows that his success isn't dependent on the other guy's failure.
Right.
That his success is dependent upon Hashem making him successful.
Right. Okay. Now, let's read on a little bit. Pasuk, again, page 144, Pasuk at base. Actually, no. Pasuk at Aleph, top line. Vayifka b'mokim, he encountered the place. Vayolen shem kiva ha-shamesh, he spent the night there because the sun had set. Vayikach me'avnei ha-mokim, he took from the stones of the place. Vayasim ha-shayisav, and he put them around his head. Vayishka b'mokim ahu, and he went to sleep in that place. So Rashi focuses on the fact that here it says Vayikach me'avnei ha-mokim, Yaakov took from the stones, plural, of the place. And after the dream of the ladder, on page 146, Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayashkem Yaakov Babeker, Yaakov got up in the morning, Vayikach es ha'eben asher samara sheisav, and he took the stone that he had placed around his head. So the first Pasuk uses a plural word for stones, and now it's one stone. So Rashi, the famous Rashi, here in this Pasuk that says that originally Yaakov had stones and he took the stones and he put the stones around his head to protect him. The stones began to quarrel. Each one said the tzaddik should rest on me. And therefore what happened at the end? The Rebbeinu Shlomo made them all become one. So therefore they started off as many stones and then they became one. Right? That's what Rashi says. Each one says, Allah yiniach tzaddik es reishay, v'zayis meres Allah yiniach. Each one wants to be the pillow for the tzaddik. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes them all into one stone, they should all be the pillow of the tzaddik. That is that Rashi brings down. The Medrash has another explanation. And that explanation goes like this. Omar, Rabbi Yehuda Omar, Yudbei Zabarim Notal, Yaakov took 12 stones. 12. Excuse me? 12 stones. Omar, so he said, Kach Gazar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shumai Megidbei Shvatim. Hashem has decreed that there will be 12 tribes, which means this is a tradition that they know, that they are meant to be to build the Jewish people, the others are meant to build the Jewish people, and the Jewish people, the foundation of the Jewish people will be 12 tribes. Avraham lo yemidan. Avraham didn't do it. Yitzchak lo yemidan. Yitzchak didn't establish the 12 tribes. Ani, what about me? If these 12 stones become one, that'll be a sign that I will be the one to build the 12 tribes, to bring up the 12 tribes. Once those 12 stones came together, now he knows that he will be the one that will establish the 12 tribes. So according to the Medrash, Yaakov's 12 stones is a test. 12 represents 12 tribes, and if the 12 stones all come together, that is how I know that I will be the one who will establish the 12 tribes. Now, how does the 12 stones becoming one stone represent that? Because it's a miracle of some sort? There were 12, and now they became one. How does that represent the sign that Yaakov will be the one to establish the 12 stones? Because they all become one.
One nation.
So the answer is becoming one nation. It signifies that the 12 stones becoming one. Okay, good. So the Shem Yishmol says like this. The way the Shem Yishmol expresses it is that when you have a complete, the Shem Yishmuel equates unity, something that is unified, as something complete. It's a complete unit, it's a complete set. Anytime you have a complete set, and you now either add to that complete set, or you detract from the set, you've destroyed the completeness. If something is complete in a certain form, and you add to it, or you subtract from it, you have destroyed the entire completeness that was there. For instance, if the Torah says to tie four species together, the lulav, the esrog, the das, and the rabbis, you have to tie them together. That means we're meant to make one unit, okay? So the whole unit, the complete unit, is four species. If I add a banana to it, what happens then? Do I have four species and a banana? Or do I have, I don't have the unit anymore. I don't have the complete unit anymore. The answer is, I don't have the complete unit anymore. Because if the complete unit is supposed to be four species coming together as one, that's the unit, then if I add to it or I take away from it, I don't have it anymore. The Jewish people, the Pasuk in Zayis HaBracha says, Vayi Bishurin Melech B'Sasef Rosh Hayom Yachad Shivta Yisrael, the tribes of Israel together. The Jewish people are also meant to be a unit. The 12 tribes are supposed to come and they're supposed to be a unit. As a unit, Yachad together, as a unit, they are a complete unit. And therefore you don't add to it, you don't subtract from it. But it has to be a unit. The number 12 actually represents a complete unit. We have 12 mazalas. The zodiac is 12 constellations, right? That's a unit that's comprised of 12. What other unit is comprised of 12? A year. There are 12 months to a year. That also comprises a unit. Now sometimes it's 13, but that's the way it's set up. Okay? But 14 is for sure going to mess it up. And he says, and if somehow or another, if you'd be adding another constellation, another, you'd make 13 zodiac signs. You'd make 13 of them. If that would be possible to produce 13, everything would blow up. Just the thing would just fall apart, because the complete unit of those things of the sphere is 12, and a month is 12. The Jewish people, there are 12 tribes. Again, a higher form of completeness that is represented by the number 12. Now, the 12 tribes, we know, represent different personalities. Not only are we only as individuals different personalities, the 12 tribes are different personalities. So how does it happen? How do these 12 distinct tribes, how do they all come together to form one unit? What is going to create that unity? What's going to make sure that there isn't some kind of dysfunction of that unity? The answer is, if everyone subjugates their will to the will of Hashem, then there'll be no break in the unity. There'll be no break in it. That's how you have the complete unity. So you have to have the 12 tribes. They have to form one unit of the Jewish people. They will form that unit when everybody, and again, if you want to have that unit, everything has to be coming together. Not only do you not add to it, you don't subtract from it. You don't allow it to fray in any way, because otherwise you don't have the unity. The only way to guarantee the unity is if everyone subjugates their will to the will of Hashem. Okay, therefore, Yaakov Avinu says, Abraham and Yitzchak did not establish the 12 tribes. Why? Well, Abram had a Yishmael, Yitzchak had an Esav. That's what they had. Therefore, within themselves, that already said, it's not possible to have a unity. One's a Tzaddik, one's a Rasha. You can't have that unity. And let's also remember, Yishmael was part of Abram's household for a while before he was thrown out. Esav was never thrown out of Yitzchak's household. So in the fact that each one had a Russia, that already said this unit of the Jewish people can't happen by Abraham, because it can't happen with Yitzchak and Yishmael. It can't happen with Yaakov and Esav by Yitzchak. And therefore, the Shem Yishmael says, and once there was no possibility of having 12 tribes from each one, they only had one child. They didn't have any more children, or any more children from Sarah. Or for Rivka, meaning from the main wives. There was no point. What their point would be now, they'd have the righteous child. The righteous child would now be the one that would be the next link that would lead towards the 12 tribes. Yaakov now wants to test to know, how about me? Do I have it within me to make the 12 tribes? And what's the sign? The sign is, will the 12 units unite? Will I be able to have these 12 distinct children, distinct, different than each other? But will they be like a Yaakov, will they be like Yitzchak and Yishmael, or Yaakov and Esav, that they can't unite together because you don't have everybody subjugating their will to the Ribbono Shel Olam? or by my children, as different as each one is going to be, will they be able to unite together? Will they all subject their will to Hashem so that it can form this complete and perfect unity of the Jewish people? When Yaakov saw that these 12 stones became one, that was a sign that says, yes, the 12 tribes are meant to come from Yaakov. Because when the 12 distinct tribes can actually become one, if the 12 tribes can become one unit, that is when you have the foundation for the Jewish people. Yaakov being shown, that can happen from him. All his children will be the kind of children that could subjugate the will to Hashem to form that one complete unit of the Jewish people.
And it wasn't the first time in 20, it was still saved from the